outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bravada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Okay, as I sit here this afternoon, I am 15 days away from the election. When you hear this, it's going to be 24 days past the election. I hope we have a firm decision by then that everybody's going to embrace. Right now, we don't. Most people are thinking Biden won. There's a few people still thinking Donald Trump got cheated out of it, and that fight's still going on somewhere. But it doesn't seem to be a significant fight at this point. I know every time I talk about election stuff, politics, whatever, I lose some of you. Some of you just go, that's it. I'm done. Turn it off. I don't hear Wayne talk about it. I get emails, people asking me, is this how you prune your audience down to nothing? And I'm saying, well, that's not how, but it does seem to be working that way. But I think these things are important. We deal with it. Did a book a year ago with Bob Prater and Arnita Taylor about a language of healing for a polarized nation. So these are things I care about. And not so much, are we going to change Washington? Because we're not. The book wasn't written for that. I didn't get involved for that. To me, it's how do we as individuals navigate the culture that we're in, the polarized people that we're with, friends, family, how it affects life and conversation. So with me today on the podcast, I've invited my co-authors to join me again and kind of talk a bit in the aftermath of this election. So joining me today from Keller, Texas, Arnita Taylor. Welcome to the God Journey, Arnita.
Thank you for having me.
Glad you could do it today. And also got from Bakersfield, California, Bob Prater. Hello, Bob.
Hey, Wayne. Hey, Arnita.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm well.
So question for you, Bob. Are the spirits still dancing?
Spirits have, they took off the classical music and they're now dancing the jitterbug over the nation. I mean, it's like they've ratcheted.
That's pretty
it
passe. I thought it'd be more like breakdancing or something.
Oh, maybe they're breakdancing. It might be breaking two electric boogaloo.
People have to check an old podcast to figure that out if they're not. But yeah, the results of the election doesn't change the problem in the U.S. and spiritual things and all kinds of reality. So I thought I'd invite you guys here today. We could talk about the aftermath of this election and not really, I hope the winner's been affirmed by the time this airs. I really do. Because we don't need any more of the confusion and the distrust of an election and all the things that are going with it right now. But what's on your heart these days? I'm going to ask both of you that. I don't know who wants. In fact, I'll start with Bob since he's shaking his head like, don't ask me. So I'm going to ask you first.
Start with Bob, please.
I'll warn you. Last podcast I did with three people, every time I threw a question out there, it was Tracy and Kyle, Tracy Levinson. And Tracy would go, Kyle? And she just kept throwing him under the bus. It is hilarious. We'll throw you under the bus, Bob, first. What's going on in your heart these days? We're not here to dance on the grave of anybody. We're not here to exult in it. We're here to say, gosh, we're still as polarized a nation today as we were before the election. So nothing's changed in that sense. What's on your heart? What are you thinking these days?
By the time this is heard, I would imagine this is going to be released after Thanksgiving.
That weekend, yeah.
I'm hoping this is resolved by Thanksgiving, because we are heading to be with family, a small 6-person gathering in Palm Springs.
Now our governor's asked us not to travel. You just ignoring that advice?
I'm breaking rules. Look at me, rule breaker.
Even our governor doesn't break rules. What are you doing?
Oh, yeah, our governor does not break any rules.
So you had a big meeting with lobbyists in the most expensive restaurant in California. Yeah, so that's a bit of a problem. But
yeah, I think
so.
Some
you're following
of what's
his example.
In California, I think a little bit is draconian, but we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about the political spirit that has enveloped the nation. Danette and I are on a bit of an island on how we view things
in your family
on the earth, family wise, and so we're holding our breath. We're apprehensive a bit. You know, her parents are in their late 80s, and so, you know, that's why we're breaking some rules, Arnita, because we just want them to be alone.
I'm a leader. Leaders live to break rules. That's what we do.
I hear you. So I'm hoping that this is somewhat put to bed, to where it's not the, you know, I just don't want to hear all the conspiracy stuff. I think that stuff is completely discombobulating us as a people, as a nation, as a church, because my gosh, we could have written a book called A Language of Healing for a Polarized Church, and it would have been right in the pocket as well. Arnita's shaking her head, and Wayne's shaking his head. I don't know. I'm apprehensive. I want some healing to come, but there have to be some adults in the room that don't want to throw sticks and stones at each other. And right now it just feels like we've gone to our corners and we're just lobbing
bombs.
Yeah,
this may be the Thanksgiving where you don't talk about religion and politics. You just eat your turkey, get in your car, and go home.
Thank you. I'll take that
Arnita
advice.
What are you thinking?
You know, I'm just not thinking. I just, you know, this is what I came to realize, that the whole election week, I happened to be at home by myself. I don't know why Michael had to travel that week. I had so much anxiety, I start painting banners.
Wow.
You know, I had to have a project for me away from watching everything. So when I get anxiety to that level that I have to get projects, I was like, well, you know, I'm probably a little bit more involved and traumatized by all this going on than not. You know, I do take it pretty serious to heart how polarized we are politically. I just, you know, I want it to be different, but I want to sound like I'm fluffy or I think there's a panacea. I don't.
Right.
I don't. So realistic enough, but I do know that this has got to be driven back down to the individual level and how you want to be a custodian going forward of more lessening the effects of hurt and trying to repair some things. Now, you know, I don't know about some friendship, you know, even myself, I saw some stuff in print on social media that's hard for me to unsee, that I must have some other conversations. But, you know, this is going to take some individual work. And, you know, I know the people who are the systemic racism people are going to scream at me when I say that. I'm never saying that's not a thing, but I'm just saying for some of where we need to go, we're going to have to drive it back down to an individual element and go from there. So I won't be talking about politics Thanksgiving at all. So that's just where we're going to be.
Yeah, we fell into an amazing conversation with Julie's over Julie's house. We were there for the celebration of her daughter's 13th birthday. And the four of us adults were around the table late in the evening, and the 16-year-old, almost 16-year-old, was joining us. And we got into a discussion about the election, about politics, and we're kind of all in similar space, so that's not an awkward conversation. But we're also talking about, particularly with my granddaughter, where Christians are in this discussion and why is it that they were so in the pocket for Trump. And it was an amazing conversation. And Julie said later, I'm so glad my daughter was in on that. She really needed to hear that there are people who believe in God that don't necessarily fall so closely in Trump's camp. Now, I've been with other people. I would say most of my friends are disappointed in the outcome of this election if it stands the way it appears to be standing. Most of my friends are there, and most of my friends had great hope that he would pull it out. And some of them even believe that it somehow got cheated out of it. There's some sinister thing going on with computer programs and blah blah blah. And I would just say, you know what? There's time to figure that out. I mean, if that's true, it'll be known. That's what I love about illusions. They eventually fall to what's true. Eventually. But I don't mind having the conversations because I think we need to talk about it. But most of my friends who supported Donald Trump wouldn't be, you know, in his wheelhouse for everything. They just liked his policies better than they would have liked Biden's. And my heart goes out to them because they're pretty disillusioned with the whole process. They're pretty hurting. They really have the fear that we're going to become a communist nation now because of this vote. And I try to assure them. I said, I just don't think that's there. I think you don't have a leftist in power that's that far to the left. But it seems to be, and this is what I keep trying to talk people back from both sides, the extremist view on both sides is what's killing us. Because there are responsible Republicans. There are responsible Democrats. There's a way, I think, for this missing middle to find each other. And we're going to do it at a personal level more than we're going to do it in Washington or Sacramento or Austin. We're gonna find each other and begin to have better conversations that are filled with love and compassion that go beyond our differences. And that, to me, that's the hope. And I hope to be in the conversation. And I'm in with almost everybody. Everybody I've been with in the last couple of weeks, which isn't a lot of people because of COVID. So it's, some of it's been on phones or whatever. But I've always asked this, how are you coming out after the election? That's usually what I ask people, just because I want to know. I'm disappointed. I'm angry. I'm content with it. I'm excited to get onto something different. I mean, I get all kinds of responses to that. But I enjoy kind of knowing where people's at and finding a way to love them there.
I'm with you. The majority of my friends fall into that camp. As a matter of fact, Danette and I got a phone call last week from a very well-meaning friend who we respect, who is older. For a half hour, he went off on us. And, you know, every once in a while I would have to, you know, mute it for a second just to kind of get my bearings. Then I'd come back in and he was still going and saying that, you know, there are going to be people that are not going to be in heaven that did not vote for Trump. Trump was God's man, God's choice. Listen, there's stuff on both sides. It's, you know, what's worse, lock her up or, you know, the craziness of, and I understand the spirit behind defund the police, but that's an incendiary statement to most people. But I get it. I understand what they mean by it, but most people don't know what they mean by it. They think that it means pull all the money away from the police departments. And so the craziness on both sides has brought us, my gosh, our book came out a year ago tomorrow.
Wow.
Yeah. A year ago
we have an tomorrow. Anniversary to celebrate? We should be celebrating.
And it's my 43rd wedding anniversary tomorrow.
Oh, that's how you know. That's how you know.
I will always know when the book came out. And so, but we're more polarized today than we were even a year ago. I don't think there's anybody that would say, no, we're not. We just are. And with people who look and believe like me, the polarization runs deep because there are, my goodness, there are churches that are bowing down to QAnon. There are churches that teach the Q points for the week in this nation. I didn't think I'd live to see that kind of stuff.
Yeah, me either.
But again, here we are. And I don't have all the good answers for that. How to love. I mean, the best I know how to do is to love through. But I don't know what that looks like. What do you think, Arnita?
I don't have thoughts in this podcast. I don't have, you know, the whole thing about, you know, God is God. You know, political leaders just don't, they're not the end all be all. So that doesn't bother me. I have friends on both sides. Some are torn to pieces. Others are happy. And so I happen to do life in a very diverse way. So I have friends on both sides. So, and that's okay with me. I like it, you know, experiencing it. You know, there's some people who call me and they can't even talk about it. There's other people who call me and they're like happy. And so certainly I don't know how we get God so in the middle of some stuff. I really don't. Not from the word that I read. So I don't understand that, but I'm not going to fight with Christians who believe that. Again, that there's so many different variables to how people see this stuff. This is what I know. You know, my thing is there's racism in the systems that undermine and undergird all of it. And that's what I want gone. I want that addressed everywhere. And I think that's politically, very, very politically infested there. So I'll just say that, and that'll be my nice answer so Wayne doesn't get a whole lot of emails that I have to delete.
Well, and I'm going to stand with you on that too, Arnita. The last few years for me have been very much eye-opening to realize how much racism exists in our culture. And that doesn't mean I'm an anti-white guy, because I'm not. But I do recognize white privilege. I do recognize that we need to have some systemic changes in our culture to bring people to equality, equal opportunity, equal treatment under the law, equal justice, equal, 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 equal. And we have those things sometimes expressed in our rights. We don't have them expressed yet in the way people live and the way they get treated in our culture. And I'm hoping we have what I have loved, because I've had some conversations with people who are really afraid that with a new president, that this is suddenly going to become a dangerous place to be a white person. And I'm like, really, with all the majority stuff you have, you're really worried that somebody's going to take this too? Because there are extremist voices. There's always extremist voices. But I told one lady this week who's involved in a curriculum thing, committee, and as a parent in the school district she attends, and they're talking about racism issues, and they're talking about curriculum, and she's worried about the indoctrination they want to put on her kids. And every time she speaks up, it's, you're a white person, you don't get to talk here. And so she was, when I was talking to her, she was incredibly frustrated. And what I thought of, because not everybody knows, but the three of us have been involved helping a college in Texas, who won't be named, over the last 3 weeks, last 2 months, starting an anti-racism initiative. They want to become an anti-racist institution. And for whatever reason, they invited the three of us to come in and go through our book with the 25 or so members of this team and kind of soften the ground and be able to talk about race in an environment where people are not abused and despised, regardless of what their point of view is. And yet the aim is we need to get to genuine racial equality. We need genuinely. And this is in one of the most conservative communities, counties in the entire nation. And what I was trying to explain to this mother is what I've enjoyed about that. And we've heard stories that would break your heart from people of various colors. We've seen people in the room, some embracing the process, some maybe still a bit skeptical of this process. But it's been a safe room to talk about what's going on here. And with the idea that we're going to help create an anti-racist institution. And even that word freaks people out, right? Because anti-racist means you're anti-white. I don't know if you want to kind of define a little bit the way you've talked about it, Arnita, I think is one of the best, and I don't mean the Wikipedia definition you use, but just your innate sense of anti-racism just means not tolerating it and speaking out.
You oppose racism. That should not be offensive to everyone. Again, everybody's not on the same seat of the bus. I have discuss with you that I think sometimes people think a conversation about race makes you an activist. It does not. It just means you had a conversation about race. Does not make you an activist. But even with that being said, I think a conversation about race can be a great catalyst for you to really examine some things and go forward in a more active way to oppose race. In America, we should all be opposing racism. The lady on the committee who's so worried about how her kids may be indoctrinated, but how have my kids been indoctrinated by curriculums that are white-centered? How do we decenter the whiteness? Why is it a problem that we should have to decenter that? So it's just a matter of where you want to sit on the bus, really, because my kid, you know, I had a son who was in a class once, and they never talked about Black people. When it got to the topic of slavery, they asked him to talk. Why? That's abusive. That's a microaggression. You never talk about Black people, and all of a sudden you're talking about slavery? He doesn't know anything about slavery. But why would you single him out to talk about slavery? He's the only Black kid in the class. So what about that kind of thing that happens all the time? So, yeah, if you're worried about people are just resistant to change, very resistant. Change is highly resisted, and this is just going to be a change. So you'll know that the people who are really for opposing racism, they show quickly. They show quickly. You know when people are just kind of blowing smoke out of the side of their neck and when they're really serious. So it's not hard to find someone who's sincere about opposing and removing racism from systems and relationships.
I would think all of us would want to do that, unless you really do think, hey, we were here first, so the white people ought to maintain supremacy in the culture, then you're not really about human equality. You're just not.
Yeah, you're not. So you're not
really- yeah, and once your eyes are open to see where some of this is happening, man, it's I won't say easy, but it seems unthinkable not to speak up when you see somebody treated differently simply because of their race. You told the story on election day of going into a store that was giving a 30% discount to people who voted. It mentioned it to the guy who was right in front of you in the checkout line. And when you got up there, it was, well, we don't know anything about a 30% discount. We're not, yet.
Didn't say a word to me. That is the most hilarious thing. Cause you know, if you remember the story, I was at a resale shop. I was spending $5.30. So I probably wouldn't even taken the 30% discount, but the fact that I was within 6 feet could hear that whole interchange, but you not ask me, did you assume I voted another way? It's just, you know, it's how everyday bias works.
But just the fact that you were singled out for different treatment from somebody 6 feet in front of you, and nobody, at least the person checking you out, has no ethical base, value, something that says, I would be embarrassed to give this to this person knowing that person overheard it and not extend the same thing to them. But they don't have that filter. Whatever it is that makes you treat people fairly, they don't have it.
Yeah, not at all. This person didn't, because she did not mention it at all.
I had a friend recently I was playing golf with, and he was telling me the story that happened the week before. He's playing with a black guy, and he was not a great golfer, but hit some really good golf shots. And when he did, my friend, because he's an old jock from a long time ago, he would just say, hey, attaboy, attaboy. And for about 5 or 6 holes, or 7 or 8 holes, he kept saying, attaboy, attaboy to him, and whenever he hit a good shot. And finally, about the 8th hole, the guy pulls him aside and says, hey, listen, don't call me boy. Please don't do that. And my friend telling me the story was all upset that his motives had been judged. He said, I wasn't calling him boy. It's just an expression we use. And so he was going on and he was looking. I mean, I'm just with him. It's only the two of us there. And he's looking for me to like be in his corner. And I just said, hey, dude, I can't go with you there. And he goes, what? I said, this guy did you a favor, man. Most guys are just going to play the round out, never tell you. And you'll go do it. This guy spoke up enough to you to say, hey, don't call that to me. And he goes, but I didn't mean anything by it. I said, do you not mean anything by it? Is that significant to him? And he for the first time, he just never thought about it. And to me, when you say that that's anti-racism, it's just being willing to speak up, willing to help people understand that your intentions are not what's important here. What's important is how you made him feel on a golf course. And you can just simply say, oh my gosh, I didn't mean anything by it. I'm sorry. I won't do it anymore. Thank you for telling me. That's all you have to say.
That's all you have to say. It's really that simple. It's not hard language. But again, you know, Bob talks a lot about humility, a lot. You have to be able to walk in a place of humility to say, you know what, I got corrected on something that I didn't expect to get corrected on. And I think in general, morally, people, when you get corrected over something that's racial, people think that makes them a racist. Well, it may just mean that I called out a racist act, but it came from somewhere. So, you know, it's just so many, it's moral, it's social, it's spiritual, you know, it's all of that in the same time. And so it's really hard, but that was a gift. And if we're going to be able to talk with each other along political, religion, race, all of the lines, we're going to have to recognize that correction is a gift and be humble enough to receive
it. And that's hard, because I think people correct something we're saying when we don't have any intentions in mind. The shame hits us, and then excuses hit us, and then blame shifting hits. And you just got to take a deep breath. Just go, wow, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that. And thank you.
I'm fascinated by the conversation, and yeah, correction is sometimes difficult, and I'm not real good with correction. At least I haven't been in my life, because it's easy for me to point back and say I was raised a certain sort of way. And so I've always had a chip on my shoulder, especially towards authority. That's me just being transparent with you. It took me a long time to finally even admit that. I used to just say, no, there's nothing wrong with me. This is just, you know, you're being a bad guy. But I've learned over the years that, Arnita, you're 100% right. Correction is a gift. We don't know. We can't learn the things that we don't know. If we don't know, we can't go forward. It's why I'm pretty open about asking questions of people that are different than me. I'll never forget the first time I sat down with Ahmad Mirza, my podcast partner, who is, you know, a well-known Muslim leader in this area. And when we sat down and had lunch, I asked him about pets. Innocent, you know, so tell me, do you have any pets? Do you have dogs? And he said, oh, are you asking me that because of how blah, blah, blah? Because there's a stereotype about Muslims and animals. I didn't know that. I really didn't know that. I know that now, but I asked the question. And sometimes when I ask questions, I step in it. Like, you know, I used to play basketball in my city a lot. And there were two older African-American gentlemen that we used to meet three times a week and just shoot around, play one-on-one, play, you know, play pickup 21, and then find other people to play with. And they were really good ball players. And I remember one time we were in between games just sitting there, and I turned to one of them and I said, "So tell me what it was like growing up in Bakersfield, California in the 60s when race was a flashpoint back then. What was it like?" And in their generosity, they answered my question. But another time I asked one of them, "Hey, did you have an afro in high school?" And he said, "That's not appropriate for you to ask."
Yeah, get out of my business. Get out of my business.
Get out of my business. And I looked at my other friend. I said, "Come on, you guys went to high school together. Just tell me." And he said, "You need to listen to what he just said." And they were my very dear friends. And it was a very innocent question, you know, because they're my friends. But, you know, I learn as I go. And you try to put that stuff away and you try to do better.
Yeah.
That's the best I can do. So do you think race played a part in this election? Do you think race plays a part in politics?
Absolutely. And that's almost absolutely it does. That's just crazy. Look at the disparities in how COVID's been handled. Racism is at the underbelly of every system in the United States of America. I say that with no qualms. You know, we had someone who could not denounce white supremacists. What is that then? You know, are you complicit if you're not against it? You're complicit as far as I'm concerned. You know, there's just some things that have shown so brightly, so brazenly with the political system this time. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Again, I think being able to confront truth is what ushers in healing. It's when we can confront truth. And right now, you know, we can't seem to find what's true. We just can't find it, and if it's true and obvious to me, then it's not obvious to you. And it's like, is that just a knee-jerk reaction? Because it's like Wayne said, some things I see are so clear. And people go, "Oh, that's not what's happening at all." So are we just gaslighting each other to death? But again, I think one-on-one healing is going to have to happen across some conversation lines.
How do we do healing when because all of us suffer from a little bit of cognitive dissonance. We just do. I mean, I can admit that about myself, but cognitive dissonance is running rampant right now. People believe what they believe, and if you say anything different, you're a liar. So how do we navigate cognitive dissonance?
I don't know. Very carefully. But I think cognitive dissonance is always around. I don't think it goes away. It's just, you know, I don't know. There's value streams, and this is what bothered me about this election. Even though there's a whole lot of people, it looks like, in America where racism is not a deal breaker. That is not new for me. I've often said one of the hard things for me as a Christian going into a white church was to understand that the sin of racism really wasn't a deal breaker. Because it's just in the system. The systems of churches were built like that in lots of places, and so it wasn't a deal breaker. And I think the results of the election showed, besides the way it was voting, showed that, you know, racism is not a priority for a lot of people who hold power in our country. And until we work on that, polarization is not going to go away in that area. So you can do it socially, you can do it one-on-one, and you don't have to deal with it. But when it comes to systems and structures and institutions, that has got to be reckoned with. Now, I'm hopeful that's going to change, but we'll see. We'll see where the
problem is. And I know there are Trump supporters who are listening to this, if they've gotten this far, maybe they didn't, but are screaming, he's renounced white supremacy any number of times. He didn't do it well at the debate. And so, there again, that's what Bob's saying. The elements people have that believe this is true or that's true, we don't have a standard perspective. I'm with you. I think it's clear that he's not the best guy to have in power when you're trying to resolve some racial disparity in our culture. He's just not. I know others disagree with me about that. I want to ask a couple of things before we run out of time here. One, you mentioned this a little bit earlier, Arnita, Do you think God chooses our presidents? I've been asked that probably five times since this election. Wayne, do you think?
I don't know. I think God knows who's going to be president. So I don't know. I think God gives us free will to choose. But I think he knows.
Yeah. But does he actually choose? Did he? Because there's people convinced 4 years ago he chose Donald Trump. And so they can't even imagine that God would have chosen Biden. So it had to be stolen, or because God's will was thwarted. I mean, we had the one lady we played her part of her thing on here calling in angels from Africa something from Africa to help resolve this election thing and give it to the man God wanted. Like, God wasn't bigger than whatever anybody else was doing. I personally, and I would have believed this growing up, that God does choose the authorities that we have. Because that's Romans 13 says that. And everybody's kind of, that's been the interpretation I've heard all my life. I am not so convinced now. In fact, I'm convinced that's not true. God says there are authorities, I don't know if that's personalized. There's authority that the government of the United States, the government of France, and when they work their best, they restrain evil. They reward good. But every system humanity's created has been corrupted. Even most of Israel's kings were not kings that God wanted. God chose two. One of them had a real problem. The other one had a little problem, but both had problems. And then the whole litany of kings after that had big problems. And only a few could say they were God-fearing, God-hearted people. And so it's like God has these authorities, not people, but structures to contain evil. That's their design. They don't always do that well, which then needs to be repented of and all that. But I don't think God chose Trump for us last time and chose Biden for us this time. I don't think that's true. I think we chose. It's a democracy.
Did he choose Saul?
He did.
He did not choose Saul. I mean, scripture is super clear. He did not choose Saul. He said that he was literally giving in to the people's desires, strong desire to be like other nations. We want a king.
Well, he didn't want to have a king, but when they decide to have a king, he did choose Saul, did he not?
Yes, he did, but he also told Samuel, he said, they've not rejected
you. Right. No, I get that.
They've rejected me. And he said, and you need to solemnly warn the people now what the king is going to take from them as his own. That's straight out of, I think.
Oh, yeah, no, Samuel, the corruption 8, of power is clear, even when God chooses the leader.
So Saul took things from that nation. And here's my view. I think the church often acts like whiny babies. That we stand on street corners and we beat our chests and we demand our way. You know, we look and we say, but abortion, but gay people, but this, but that, but that, but that, but that. And eventually the Lord says, okay, I'm going to give you what you've demanded. Because we're not asking, we're demanding. And so here comes, this is only my view, your mileage may vary, by the way. The result of a petulant church was Donald J. Trump, who said, I could shoot a man on Fifth Avenue and I wouldn't lose your vote. Well, we've seen that he hasn't shot a man on Fifth Avenue, but there's been a lot of crazy over the last 4 years and he didn't lose votes, he gained votes. So I hold out hope, but I don't know how we get there other than, Arnita, what you said, bringing it down to an individual level where we choose to do life differently and we love in a different manner. We honor and respect one another. It's the best I can do today.
And we love people right where they are. Yeah. Which is very different. You guys see the video from John Voight, the actor, posted on his Twitter account? Have you heard this, seen this? This is, to me, the scariest thing that comes out of an election like this. This is what he said. There will be a price to pay. The ones who are jumping for joy now are jumping toward the horror they will be in for. I know the promises being made from the left to the American people will never come to be. My friends from all colors, races, and religions, this is now our greatest fight since the Civil War. The battle of righteousness versus Satan. Yes, Satan, because these leftists are evil, corrupt, and they want to tear down this nation. We must not allow this. We must fight this corruption that has taken over and fight for the good that seems lost. Let us give our trust to God and fight now for Trump's victory, because we all know this ballot count is a corruption like they are. So let us not back down. Let us fight this fight as if it is our last fight on earth. Now, I know people who would lean into the premise of what John Voight is saying, who would not lean into the violence of it. But I'm telling you, that attitude of I have got exactly right, and anybody who voted in opposition to me is Satan, is evil, and this is a contest between good and evil when they're both flawed human political parties that have got some good things they put on the table and some bad things they put on the table, and they have extremist voices in them that are more wanting to divide us as Americans than help us find a way to live together. That is the scariest thing I've ever heard anybody say, and I hope there's not, because we got the Timothy McVeighs out there. We've got the disturbed individuals who will take a gun, take a bomb from something this stupid being said and go hurt people because of it. And the idea that, you know, Trump is God's choice, Biden is Satan. I know Christians that would make that conclusion. They feel like God lost this election. God's will was thwarted. And just what kind of God you have can be thwarted in election, even if there's cheating. You know what I mean? That's a pretty wimpy God to start with. This is the thing that makes me pray a lot. God, keep us from this. Keep us from, because as I said, I think on an earlier podcast, it seems I had hoped in the first presidency that whatever influence the church had toward Donald Trump, they would invite him toward greater love, greater humility, greater wisdom, greater growth.
Well, did that happen?
No, the opposite happened. The church became more petulant, more bullying, more angry, more demanding. And I don't mean church in capital C. I mean with air quotes around it. And people who follow God, who got invested in Trump as their savior, became more like him than he became like them. And this is, I don't know about John Voight's, I mean, he appeals to God in the midst of this thing, but this would be the ultimate. Again, I hope this is such an extreme statement, it isn't even worth talking about. But I know people who put this, people I love, people I'm close to, who put this election in. This is a vote for good or evil.
And I know people who voted the exact opposite of what you're talking about.
Who saw it as good and evil as well. I agree with you. I do.
This is a vote against evil.
And that's where, as a country, we're horribly divided. If we don't find some more human connection with each other, that is, yeah, we may see politically different. You may think that party's all good and mine's all bad, and I might think yours is all bad, mine's all good. But I think those are just stupid conclusions. We're humanity that's broken, and we've got to tend toward the things that matter, and hopefully our government leaders can aspire to better. But I have no hope that these political parties, as entrenched as they are by money and lobbyists and power, and I don't think they're going to be it. I pray for a third party to emerge someday that draws from the missing middle. This whole, not the extreme left, not the extreme right, but people who are saying, look, we're for a fair, just, honest, open culture, society. And we can build that. But right now, the power and the microphones are not with those people. The power and the microphones are with those that prefer to divide us rather than they want to heal us. And so the healing work's got to be done. I think we've been talking about this all along. It's got to be done at an individual level.
And I think both. I think when people hear us say that, because I get a lot of flack that, now, you know, it just can't be at the individual level. Of course I know that. I've lived in black skin all my life. Of course I know that. So it's really insulting to me when people go, well, you know, there's systemic racism. Of course we know that. Of course we do. But this book didn't take on the scope of all that, because at some point, three people just said, we have got to try to help people talk through some of this crazy. Right. Just do that. We can't even get people to do that. So it's like, y'all, at some point, as part of the human community, as part of a divine human community, because God made all of us, how do we want to relate to each other? How, I'm not saying you won't disagree, but how do you want to relate to each other?
And if you can't talk to someone who differs from you without getting angry and feeling assaulted and attacked, you need to check yourself. Particularly if you're a person who claims the faith and love of God, you need to check yourself if you can't have a conversation with somebody who sees things differently than you do and not result to anger and bullying and name-calling and shame-casting and all that kind of stuff. You just need to check yourself.
That's good advice.
Talking about our 1 year out. A different kind of year because of COVID-19, but really and truly, I've connected with a whole lot of people I've never had a face-to-face with that I would not have connected with. Yeah, because like some of y'all's friends send me messages. It's hilarious to me. I love it. You know, that kind of thing, that even though it was virtual, there's still a way to have human connection in a way that can be meaningful and significant. Since we didn't get to go do a lot of face-to-face stuff, but it's still been very fruitful. I get messages all the time from people who go, you know what? That one page right there changed my life. I don't know what they're going to do with it, but just to hear that, that's very rewarding to me. Even though it's a hard year for the book, it was still a really good year for a lot of people. I've watched a lot of people grow and say, you know, I really want to be different in this area. And so that's a win for me.
I'm still surprised at the response to the book that it was received so positively. And I expected it to be positive, but not as glowing as it has been. And it's, I mean, there's a lot of people that just love the book.
Yeah, I've watched that with a lot of people that I know who've become real activists in this conversation. And they're really embracing and engaging being a voice in the culture. So I that's all a win for me, all that right there. And I can probably name you 50 people that I've seen just in their emails to me. They've become part of a conversation they were unaware of a year ago. That's pretty cool.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.